It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price, the Blame Game. 1 year later.
He's not just a former president. He's a defeated former president.
That is our top story at noon. President Biden speaking on the one-year anniversary of the Capitol attacks earlier today from the Capitol Rotunda. Mr. Biden putting the blame for those attacks squarely on the shoulders of his predecessor, Donald Trump.
Here's the truth. The former president of the United States of America has created and spread a web of lies about the 2020 election.
Mr. Biden says the former president tried to rewrite history. Former South Carolina Congressman Trey Gowdy says the president's speech today did nothing to unite the country.
This country is not going to be united because of some speech made by a president or a former president. It will only be united when the people are sick and tired of the conflict. Contrast is fine. Conflict. It will be a bottom-up unification. It will not be because of some speech made at Mar-a-Lago or Statuary
Hall. Vice President Kamala Harris, meantime, raised a few eyebrows today when she compared the Capitol riot to Pearl Harbor and, more recently, 9/11. Brett Baer at Fox News.
Some people, they're going to find that, I think, pretty hyperbolic. And for 9/11 family survivors, maybe insulting.
Five people were killed in the attacks a year ago. Today, more than 725 have been arrested. Democrats using today's anniversary to push for controversial new voting rights, which would, among other things, nationalize our elections. Showdown in Chicago, the other big story at noon.
Why are we sacrificing our kids like this?
The Windy City walkout, the teachers' union in the nation's third largest school district, forcing last-minute school closures for a second straight day.
Going into schools puts us at risk, puts our students and families at risk of contracting the coronavirus. We've been failed by the mayor. We've been failed by the public health office.
Jesse Sharkey, president of the Chicago Teachers Union, Mayor Lori Lightfoot, now threatening to withhold teacher pay, and she's taking legal action if educators don't get back to the classroom.
When you tell me you're too busy to be at the table all day long to get a deal done, you tell that to our parents and those kids who are suffering and depend upon us to do the right thing.
The war of words in Chicago impacting roughly 300,000 kids. This mother of two says she can't go to work because her kids are stuck at home waiting to see which side blinks first.
Our children need to be in school with masks, with social distancing. They're doing everything they can to keep these kids safe in school. There's no reason for them to be at home. My kids are being held hostage at home.
And the fight over school safety extends well beyond Chicago. It's become a lightning rod of controversy in major cities across the U.S. The Biden administration says kids belong in the classroom. White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki.
We are more than equipped to ensure schools are open, and we're going to keep our children and educators who selflessly serve their community safe. This includes schools everywhere, including in Chicago.
The White House says taxpayers have already spent billions of dollars to ensure schools can stay open during the pandemic. Political pundit Will Kane says the decision to close them by powerful teachers' unions are destroying kids today.
For 2 years, where we know there is isolation, depression, loss of learning, and increasing risk of suicide, what we have watched is a society who takes its most vulnerable, its children, and to add on top of that, disproportionately its black and brown children, to the top of the volcano and toss them into the fire. We have sacrificed our children at the altar of fear and power and all the other ugly human sins.
And while schools in Chicago remain closed today, there are signs some of them may be able to reopen with limited capacity tomorrow. Now to the crime crisis in America. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg doubling down on his controversial decision not to prosecute certain crimes in the Big Apple. The new DA says the old status quo of putting criminals in prison isn't working.
What we're doing now is not working. Plain and simple. And so this is our path forward. This is how we reduce violent crime.
Would these policies give criminals a green light?
No. I mean, it just depends upon your definition of a criminal.
Former New York City Police Commissioner Howard Safer says Alvin Bragg needs to go.
He was elected to prosecute crimes, not to change the law. And what he's doing here is changing the law and enabling criminals to do outrageous things. This is stupid.
Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan says failing liberal policies in cities like New York and Chicago could open up big windows for Republicans in this year's midterms.
What's the message from the left? The left says, we're not going to let your kids go to school, and now we're going to let criminals roam your streets. I think you'll see Republicans run, and I think you'll see more of them win now that we see how radical the left is.
Judge Jeanine Pirro spent decades as a prosecutor in New York City. She says the new mayor, Eric Adams, promised to crack down on crime, but so far has yet to deliver.
This is going to throw us back to the Wild West. New York will lose its home values, its business values. Your kids are not safe going to school. You're not safe riding on the streets. There is no traffic crimes that will be prosecuted. This guy Bragg should be. We ought to start the recall now.
And critics say the soft on crime policies in liberal-run cities are leading to a mass exodus of Americans who are voting with their feet and heading to red states across the country. Maskless in Miami, another Democrat spotted out in public in Florida without a face mask on. California Congressman Eric Swalwell photographed without the face covering as he vacationed with his family in the Sunshine State. Just last week, Swalwell accused Republicans of, quote, prolonging the pandemic.
This is why we have no buy-in when it comes to public health initiatives, is none of the people pushing them are following themselves, and we all know that.
Pundit Jimmy Fallon says the rules for thee but not for me behavior by Swalwell and other Democrats is a big reason why most Americans don't trust the messaging when it comes to COVID.
They know they don't have solutions to this pandemic. Joe Biden said when he was running, anybody who presided over as many deaths as Donald Trump shouldn't be president. Well, Joe Biden has presided over more deaths than Donald Trump, despite inheriting three vaccines.
Fallon says blue state Democrats are now flocking to mandate-free Florida, despite criticizing Governor Ron DeSantis for his lax policies during the pandemic. Media critic Joe Concha.
And it speaks volumes as far as Democratic lawmaker after Democratic lawmaker. Remember, Gretchen Whitmer, Michigan, went down to Florida after telling people literally in her state not to go to Florida because of all the vaccine non-mandates. So it is rules for thee, not for D's in this case. And the D's, of course, stand for Democrats.
Concha says Democrats have no solutions for containing COVID and are now playing the blame game. Days after a major snowstorm stranded motorists in Northern Virginia for up to 24 hours, a nor'easter now taking aim at D.C.
For the nation's capital, which doesn't often have snow on the ground for a long period of time, you're just going to be adding to that base with another 2 to 3 inches of snow.
Forecaster David Parkinson says up to 6 inches of snow possible for folks from Virginia to Vermont. Still to come this Thursday, snow day in Buffalo, new mayor in Ithaca, and going remote in Rochester.
Well, good afternoon. Our focus is on lake flakiness this afternoon, causing some difficult travel in heavy windblown snows areas east of Lake Erie in Ontario, including Metro Buffalo and south of Watertown. I'll be back. We'll talk about the complete forecast for you coming up. We'll see you in about 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin Williams checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Thursday, January 6th, city schools in Rochester, New York went remote today after a spike in COVID. Superintendent Leslie Myers-Small says they hope the switch is only temporary.
We recognize that this could be burdensome, and that's why my hope is that it will only be for a few days so that we can shift back fully to in-person learning.
The district says they hope to have students back in the classroom next Tuesday, but the head of the teachers' union in Rochester thinks remote learning should stay until the Omicron variant has died down. Adam Urbanski says it's still not safe for teachers and kids to be in school.
Our goal is to return to in-person learning as soon as the district has taken the time to truly develop an effective plan.
Some teachers in the district say they're upset it's taken so long to go remote in Rochester.
I think it's disappointing that it's taken them so long to make this decision and that we've had so many people who have been exposed to danger for this long.
We all prefer in-person learning and we all think in-person learning is what's best for kids, but we want to do it when it's safe.
But a lot of parents say the district is failing the kids by returning to virtual learning.
It kind of hurts because last year is challenging and I'm just scared because, you know, especially for my daughter who receives the special services, it's going to be hard and I'm just scared, you know, that it's going to last longer than Tuesday.
The school officials in Rochester say they'll let the parents know by noon next Monday if students can return to the classroom in the Flower City. Snow day in Buffalo. Schools closed for the day in the Queen City with no remote learning. Hamburg Superintendent Mike Cornell says kids and teachers need a break in this era of COVID.
We've been through a lot. School children have had to do without a lot. I don't think any of us in our position to take away snow days along with all the other stuff that we've asked people to do without. So snow day is going to be a snow day.
Heavy lake effect snow falling over ski country today. Patrick Lucy, the highway superintendent in Amherst, New York.
If there's no traffic on the road and there's no cars parked on the street, it can definitely shave time off how quickly we can do our plowing operation.
Lake effect snow warnings up for parts of western and central New York through early tomorrow morning. Some places could get up to 18 inches of snow. Another consequence of COVID, the time it takes to fix your car. It's up dramatically because of a lack of mechanics.
It's been a struggle at times. We usually run with about 7 technicians when we're fully staffed. We're currently running with 4, but it's just the way it is now, I guess, you know.
Kevin Gardner runs a tire and auto store in Dunmore, Pennsylvania. Ron Fellows is one of his mechanics.
It's hard to get help and laborers, and it's hard with the COVID going on right now, and it's just been a real tough season.
Experts say if you need your vehicle serviced, it's best to call ahead and make an appointment, or else you could be in for a very long wait. Well, after serving as mayor of Ithaca for the past 10 years, Savante Myrick says he's stepping down next month.
It's been my privilege to give a State of the City address 9 times before, and it's with deeply mixed emotions that I announce that this will be my final State of the City address.
Myrick was sworn into office at just 24 years of age a decade ago, making him the youngest mayor in the city's history. He calls his time as mayor of Ithaca one of the proudest achievements of his life.
I love the city. I love serving the city. I feel like my service has made a difference. Being the 44th mayor of the city of Ithaca has been the honor of my lifetime.
Savante Myrick stepping down to become executive director of the liberal think tank People for the American Way. His last day on the job in Ithaca, February 7th. A Pennsylvania group plans to relocate Afghan immigrants to Cambria County to help offset a declining population there. Family Life's Paul Price.
Yeah, could the Johnstown area be a good area for Afghan immigrants to relocate to? That's the question being posed by the group Vision Together 2025. It's a group dedicated to making the Johnstown area a better place to live. The group's president, Mike Tedesco, confirms an exploratory committee has been formed to look into the possibility of recruiting Afghan refugees to Cambria County. The U.S. government evacuated more than 75,000 Afghans after our bungled pullout from Afghanistan in August. 50,000 have already been placed in local communities. The rest remain on 6 military bases across the country. Tedisco says bringing some of those refugees to Cambria County could be a solution to the skilled worker shortage problem plaguing Pennsylvania. Bob Price, Family Life News.
All right, Bob, you're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life. Let's do sports. Novak Djokovic being denied entry into Australia over the country's COVID vaccination requirements. He was initially granted a medical exemption so he could play in the Australian Open, but the tennis star was issued a letter by the government there saying his visa was denied. Djokovic, a 9-time winner of that event, as well as the defending champion. The Bengals going to be without 2 of their offensive stars this weekend. Running back Joe Mixon tested positive for COVID. He won't play Sunday against the Browns. And quarterback Joe Burrow also missing the regular season finale to rest sore right knee and an injured finger. The NFL looking at a potential Super Bowl 56 alternate location. A league spokesperson says they're not planning to move the February 13th game from SoFi Stadium in Southern California, but they are looking at options right now. The league may use AT&T Stadium in Dallas as an alternative site if potential COVID restrictions in Southern California make SoFi Stadium a no-go. Heisman Trophy runner-up Aiden Hutchinson leaving Michigan and declaring himself eligible for the NFL draft. Hutchinson thanked Wolverine Nation on Twitter when announcing his move. The defensive end, a winner of the Lombardi Award, which is given to the top linemen in the nation. To the NBA, the Mavericks pulling out a big win on the same night that Dirk Nowitzki had his jersey lifted into the rafters. Dallas beat the Warriors 99-82 at the American Airlines Center. Nowitzki's ceremony taking place after the game. Friends and family in attendance. The team also announcing a statue will be built in Nowitzki's honor. He was quite a player. From the Family Life Sports Desk, I'm Bill Price. And still to come this Thursday, Windy City walkout, Gotham City crackdown, and D.C. a year later.
Today on Breakpoint, an Oscar-winning film, a Civil War general, and an important but often overlooked Christian holiday. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Today's perhaps the most significant Christian holiday that most Americans know the least about. Epiphany is set aside in the church calendar to remember the visitation of the Magi to the infant Jesus and his family. Through these strange visitors, God's gift of himself to the world was made manifest to the wider world. And in much of the Christian world, until at least recently, gifts were exchanged on Epiphany, not Christmas Day. For example, a former Breakpoint colleague who grew up in Puerto Rico recalls neighborhood children leaving straw out for the Magi's camels on the night before Epiphany. Though gift-giving today has largely shifted to December 25th, what Epiphany commemorates is central to our Christian faith and is thus worthy of our attention. Among those who understood this was Lew Wallace, who lived about as eventful of a life as possible. Civil War buffs will tell you that Wallace might have saved the Union at the Battle of Monocacy in 1864 when his forces delayed Confederate General Jubal Early long enough to prevent him from possibly capturing Washington, D.C. Later, as a territorial governor of New Mexico, Wallace dealt with the likes of Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. Still, it was a reunion of Civil War veterans that led to that for which Wallace is best known today. On the train ride to an 1876 reunion in Indianapolis, Wallace was reunited with Colonel Robert Ingersoll, who was known as the Great Agnostic. Ingersoll traveled across the country, deriding and challenging people of faith. And this time, it was his old comrade in arms, even though Wallace was, at the time, mostly indifferent to his own Christian faith. Wallace would later describe the conversation with Ingersoll this way, quote, "To lift me out of my indifference, one would think only strong affirmations of things regarded holiest would do. Yet here was I now, moved as never before. And by what? The most outright denials of all human knowledge of God, Christ, heaven, and the hereafter, which figures so in the hope and faith of the believing everywhere." Well, determined to prove Ingersoll wrong, Wallace returned to a short story that he had written during the Civil War about the Magi. The conversation prompted Wallace to wonder again, who were they? Whence did they come? Above all, what led them to Jerusalem, asking of all they met the strange question, where is he that is born King of the Jews? Well, starting with this meditation on the Epiphany, Wallace expanded the story, adding more and more meditations on the life of Christ. Eventually, in 1880, he published the finished work about a fictitious Jewish prince named Judah Ben-Hur, who discovered the necessity of a savior. You probably know it as Ben-Hur, the Tale of the Christ. Well, Ben-Hur remained the best-selling American novel until Gone with the Wind was published in 1936. And of course, it was the basis of the 1959 film starring Charlton Heston, which won a record 11 Academy Awards. When Wallace died in 1905, he believed he'd met Ingersoll's challenge. And like the Magi before him and John Murray after him, Wallace's reflection took the light of Christ to the world around him. The rhythm of our society today largely distracts us and our neighbors from that true light, which gives light to everyone. It's hard enough to see the light in such a culture like ours, and it's even harder to fulfill our calling to take that light to others. A great way to start is by remembering and celebrating Epiphany. We've compiled a number of resources at breakpoint.org to help you do just that. God has called the Colson Center to help Christians take the light of Christ into the world. So take a minute while you're at breakpoint.org to learn more about our podcast, the Colson Fellows Program, and the upcoming Wilberforce Weekend in May. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
20 minutes past the hour, the Lake Flakes piling up in ski country today. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. We have a very active and complicated weather pattern. Shifting bands of lake snow and a general overall snowfall expected over the next 48 hours to produce periods of tricky travel. For this afternoon, the main concern will be east and east-northeast of Lake Erie in Ontario, with snowfall rates of an inch or two an hour in Greater Buffalo and south of Watertown, and blowing snow as well. Outside of those two lake effect areas, the afternoon brings variable clouds, sunshine, and flurries. High temperatures in the 20s and low 30s. Lake snows will shift south tonight into the western Twin Tiers and across parts of central New York. Several inches of snow there. Elsewhere and otherwise, partly cloudy with snow flurries. Low tonight, down to 20. We're in the 20s tomorrow. The sun returns on Saturday.
All right, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. If you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Thursday, January 6th. President Biden speaking on the one-year anniversary of the January 6th Capitol attacks earlier today from the Capitol.
A crowd that professes their love for law enforcement assaulted those police officers, dragged them, sprayed them, stomped on them.
The president placing the blame for the attack squarely on the shoulders of his predecessor, Donald Trump.
He's not just a former president. He's a defeated former president.
Five people died in the attacks a year ago today. Over 725 people have been arrested. Attorney General Merrick Garland vowing to hold everyone responsible, accountable.
Such conduct disrupts the peace of our public spaces and undermines our democracy. We are all Americans. We must protect each other.
Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal says January 6th, 2021, a day he'll never forget.
I will never forget being on the Senate floor and being told, you must leave now for your own safety.
Senator Blumenthal says he watched as the mob mounted its attack.
We saw through the windows the rioters with pipes, and we could hear them down the hall. They were literally just 50 feet from us. And it was a moment of real horror and fear.
Vice President Kamala Harris, meantime, raised a few eyebrows today when she compared the Capitol riots to Pearl Harbor and more recently 9/11. Former Education Secretary Bill Bennett.
It's ridiculous. It's an abomination. It shows an ignorance of American history. As ugly as January 6th was, it doesn't in any way rise to the level of those events.
Security at the U.S. Capitol, meantime, has undergone some big changes since the attack a year ago. Correspondent Christopher Cruz continues.
Since January 6th, 2021, the U.S. Capitol Police Department has undergone transformative change. Chief Tom Manger.
A blueprint for operational planning has been created and put into place for all future significant events. If January 6th taught us anything, it's that preparation matters.
Manger told a Senate committee that almost all of the recommendations for change made by the Inspector General have been implemented.
That is Christopher Cruz reporting. 5 million children will be able to roll up shirt sleeves today for COVID booster shots.
The motion passes as written, and I believe it is 13 yeses and one no.
The CDC voting to recommend Pfizer's follow-up vaccines for 12 to 15-year-olds 5 months after second doses. Public school kids in Chicago, meantime, staying home for a second day after teachers voted to switch over to remote learning over COVID safety protocols. Mayor Lori Lightfoot says she's suing to get teachers back in the classroom.
Enough is enough.
We are standing firm and we are going to fight to get our kids back in in-person learning.
Some 300,000 school kids staying home today in Chicago. In New York, the new DA doubling down on his controversial decision not to prosecute certain crimes in the Big Apple. District Attorney Alvin Bragg says the old ways of locking up criminals isn't working. And the new mayor and former cop Eric Adams, who promised to crack down on crime, backing his DA.
I believe that he's going to be a good district attorney, and I'm going to sit down and have a conversation with him as we build out what we need to do around public safety. Team public safety is not only handcuffs. Team public safety is also ending the pipeline that turn people into career criminals.
But New York Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis says these soft-on-crime policies will turn the Big Apple into the Wild West.
And then you see 84% of the residents of Manhattan vote for this district attorney who campaigned on these policies. He said he was going to do this, and they still voted for him. You know, if we're going to continue to elect people like this in our city, you know, Batman is not even going to be able to save Gotham anymore.
The critics say the policies being imposed by New York's DA will hurt businesses and tourism in New York. A candlelight vigil held last night for the 12 victims of yesterday's horrific row house fire in Philadelphia. 8 children among the dead.
We wanted to show our support to the family members and friends. It's such a tragic, tragic event.
A cause still being investigated. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Under Fire. Each Thursday on Family Life, we give voice to religious battlegrounds in this nation. I'm your host, Tracy Lynn. With us today, Mississippi pastor Adam Wyatt. Thank you so much for speaking to me as we mark 1 year since the attack on the U.S. Capitol. The ideas of nationalism and patriotism both include having pride in our country, and yet there's a significant difference between the two. Would you explain those, Adam?
Well, you know, the thing about nationalism, it's one of those big terms right now that means so many different things to so many different people. You know, other terms like CRT or, well, what does it even mean to be a conservative now? And so the way I tried to define nationalism is just that nationalism is basically a seeking to say that my country is somehow inherently better than other countries. Patriotism is quite a bit different, I think. It's more of a loyalty to our country. But when you start to think that our nation or this nation or that nation's better, I think we kind of miss out on the point that God's created everybody in his image, and God has also established all nations.
Adam, as Christians, we are called to live as citizens of the kingdom of heaven and also in the nation that we live in. In light of that, what is biblical patriotism?
Yeah, the way I like to frame biblical patriotism is a loyalty to our country, to our people, and to our culture. I think you see the concepts of loyalty found throughout Scripture, and I think it is a way for us to say there is something inherently good about the place God has placed me. I didn't choose to be born where I was. None of us did. Just like we don't choose to be born to our parents, but the Bible tells us that we should honor our parents just because they are our parents. I think in much the same way, we have a loyalty to our country because it's ours, and God has placed us wherever we are. That doesn't mean that everything's good. It doesn't mean that everything's righteous or holy. It doesn't mean we shouldn't work for change. It doesn't mean any of those things. It just means there's something special about our place, our home, our land. And then there's something special about our people. And then there's something special about our culture. And so I think patriotism can definitely be a good thing. It's a much better alternative than nationalism.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that you mention loyalty to the culture. That culture of America has drawn people from all over the world to our shores. Quick question, how can we show love for our country without venturing into idolatry?
Loyalty to our country, I don't think it means blind attachment, okay? I think we need to be critical patriots. You know, there are great things about our country, and there's a reason that people come from all corners of the globe to come here. We've done some great good in the world. But that also means, I think, that we should say we did have slavery. That's something we've got to figure out. We can't just gloss over that. We have aborted close to 60 million babies in 40, 50 years. That's not good. And I think we need to recognize that there are some things that we need to deal with, and there are things that we need to tackle. And I think we do that from a gospel-centered perspective, where we are trying to share the gospel and spread the gospel and love our neighbor and serve people. But also, because we're Americans and we have this great political system, we also can vote and go into politics, and we can seek to make changes. We can do these things just by the nature of the way we are organized, which is also a good thing. And so I think we need to do both. But politics should never trump the gospel mission that God's given us. That's far more important. And as we do that, then let's also work to make political change wherever we can for the good.
Our nation's flag is typically linked with patriotism. What insights do you have from the Bible about viewing our flag in proper perspective?
You've got the flag, you've got the capital, so many different things that serve as symbols, and those are good things. Because the Bible does tell us that we need to give honor where honor's due. And so I think it's entirely appropriate for us to consider honoring those that have served. And the Bible tells us very clearly we're supposed to pray for the government leaders and things like that. In some of the research that I've seen in my book, 60% of churches across all denominations and faiths have some sort of a flag in their church building. They're not all necessarily in their sanctuary, but they do have that. The flag is a central symbol of a highly patriotic nation, and so displaying it is really seen as some sort of a statement affirming our allegiance to the United States. For a guy my age, I remember when 9/11 hit, and then instantaneously, you could not find a flag in a store because they were sold out, and they were everywhere. And I remember that it was such a powerful symbol of solidarity for me during that time. So they do have a big role in our life. The question is it a needed symbol inside the church? Is it necessary? Or is it just one of those things that's a neutral symbol? And I believe it depends on where you are.
That's Pastor Adam Wyatt. I'm Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
Thank you, Tracy. Faith Under Fire comes your way Thursdays during the noon report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. We have a very active and complicated weather pattern. Shifting bands of lake snow and a general overall snowfall expected over the next 48 hours to produce periods of tricky travel. For this afternoon, the main concern will be east and east-northeast of Lake Erie in Ontario, with snowfall rates of an inch or two an hour in Greater Buffalo and south of Watertown, and blowing snow as well. Outside of those two lake effect areas, the afternoon brings variable clouds, sunshine, and flurries. High temperatures in the 20s and low 30s. Lake snows will shift south tonight into the western Twin Tiers and across parts of central New York. Several inches of snow there. Elsewhere and otherwise, partly cloudy with snow flurries. Low tonight, down to 20. We're in the 20s tomorrow. The sun returns on Saturday.
All right, Kevin, finally at noon, did the FBI find Civil War era gold in the Keystone State? Family Life's Brandon Dixon says treasure hunters are suing for answers.
Treasure hunters who believe they found a huge cache of fabled Civil War era gold in Pennsylvania are now on the prowl for something as elusive as the buried booty itself. Government records of the FBI's excavation. Finders keepers filed a federal lawsuit Wednesday against the Justice Department over its failure to produce documents on the FBI's search for the legendary gold, which took place nearly 4 years ago at a remote woodland site in northwestern PA. Finders keepers questioned whether the agency is acting in good faith. The FBI has long insisted the March 2018 dig came up empty, but the agency has consistently stymied efforts to obtain information. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. That is the world we live in this Thursday. As always, thanks for joining us today. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.